stories that make the Elm City tick. Babs is floating into the end of the week here.
I know.
Long week, great job.
I've been here. Thank you. Thank you.
Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, which we're about to begin here in the WNHH studio with the number one pundits in the media universe.
Woo.
Pundits like Babs Rawls Ivy, the dairy-free goddess of our grassroots radio operation.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm here.
We're supposedly going to be joined by Markeisha Ricks.
Oh, she is coming. Okay.
The flyest news hunter-gatherer this side of Fleet Street, but I haven't heard of it.
She's probably taking a bus. You know how that means. It's not her fault.
We have the bravest man in New Haven, the studio. You know who that is.
Especially after yesterday.
Yep. More apologetic than ever for his heartthrob, Donald
Trump.
What's
up? What's up?
WNHH station manager, Harry Dross.
Harry.
And the just-in-time judge of jackals and japery, the sentinel of serenity and salvation.
Oh, my God.
There we go.
The poobah of unparalleled political passion and perspicacity.
Yeah.
The righteous reaper of restitution, Mr. Top 2%, or the exalted expostulator of extemporaneous exegesis. The bossa nova mover and shaker, the griot of the grassy knoll.
Yeah.
The conquistador of cussing criminals, keeper of the cure, weaver of wellness and wisdom, mellifluous and meritocratic minor of melody. The plow driver of peace.
Yeah.
The driver out of demons, discord and dissidence.
Yes.
He's the optimizer of opulence and opportunity. Mm-mm. The undertaker of unfiltered utterance.
Are you
the
ready to show some
ergonomics, the liberated line of lucidity, the maniacal monarch of mercy, the
easy, my introduction is
brain
on
brain dead bozos. He's our executioner of existential enemies.
There you go.
Alchemist of assonance and alliteration, the zealous zapper of xenophobia.
Yes.
The sagacious sergeant assault of swing, quintessential quipper of quotable quackery, grandee of grandiloquence and gastronomics. Our prized protector against pusillanimity.
Woo!
The distinguished duke of diplomacy and detente, king of conspiracy concoction, deacon of the dozens, bodhisattva of battle rap, missionary of modesty, mesmerizer of the masses, the shaman of the shoreline,
yes,
the potentate of 360 state, the recognized ringleader of risque repartee, the eighth wonder of the world,
yeah,
wizard of wise guy waggery, capo of casual conversation, first,
woo,
name in flame,
yes,
the
sir,
daring don of dope deliberation, sultan of spit, West Indian whisperer of wonk, the emperor of explosive exposition, esteemed elucidator of rebonics, top tier talent from Trinidad and,
yes,
Tobago,
sir,
the daptone deliverer of decency, maximal media maestro, bodacious boldface barista of bop, chess master of chill, primo practitioner of pop prestidigitation,
yeah,
just somewhat honorable high priest of hip-hop, right reverend of rapture, reigning raconteur of riffitude, sanctified slayer of the slow-witted, never late for supper, decorated, dazzling, indefatigable dunker, and drive the dinner dishes, maximum mythologist,
yes,
Joe Ugly,
yes, sir,
of the Joe Ugly Show in the Morning.
Woo! The man with many titles.
Welcome, everyone.
Woo!
To Pundit Friday. Yes, Markeisha Ricks is here. Good morning, Markeisha.
Hello, Markeisha.
Thanks for stopping by. Well, folks.
Stopping by.
Oh, we had to get started at some point, Markeisha.
I could stop by some other places if you.
No, well, you know.
The thing is, she knew that there was a 20-minute introduction of Joe.
No. That 20-minute introduction
easy
is needed for people who are running late.
Including yourself,
yes,
because you like to run late. We could start your intro and then you get here.
But I get here before the beginning.
Well, in addition to family squabbles, we are going to talk about some news here on Pundit Fridays, including this was the end of, it is hot in here. This is the end of the regular session at the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
They went up. They are going to have a special session coming up about the budget, which is the elephant in the room this year, $5.1 billion budget deficit they have to raise over, wow, the next 2 years. But there was that race to the midnight clock, Wednesday into Thursday, where bills people have been working on all spring and half of the winter to try to make things better in New Haven or change things, live or die by if they get voted on by the stroke of midnight. And Markeisha Ricks was there watching the legislators rush around. How did that go, Markeisha?
A lot of bills died.
Wow.
How did New Haven make out? Anything we care about make it through?
We got the biggest thing we got was the last minute deal on Union Station, which was a part of the legislative process, and then it wasn't because it got amended out.
Mm.
And we also got these vacant parcels of land from the state.
So let's roll up and tell people what that's about. The city has been fighting with the State Department of Transportation for months about the future of the train station, Union Station. The city feels like that's the gateway of the city. They've done a good job making it a great place after it was about to be closed down by the state a few decades ago. The city manages it. The state owns it. The state said, look, you're building a second garage. You want to have stores there. New urbanism tying to the neighborhood, bus depot. We want stores on the first floor of the train station and the garage. we want to put a lot more money into it. The state says, we don't want you running this thing for long because we don't think you don't do a good job. They wanted to get millions out of the station to help pay some of their other bills. And they were fighting about it, and there was a bill to force the state to sell it to the city. In the end, what happened with that, Marquise?
In the end, they struck a deal.
But I mean, like, what happened? The city's not going to own it, right?
No, the city's not going to own it. They're going to get to run it a bit longer. And they're also going to get some of the things they wanted, like a redesign of the second garage to possibly have some storefronts. They're also getting, like, bike lanes and other things to help make it, walkable and... Mm-hmm. So they actually got a lot. They aside from not being able to outright own Union Station, mm-hmm. They got, what was it, 5 years additional?
Yeah, that wasn't a big deal because it was always going to be a 3-year contract with 2-year option to renew. But what they got was $2 million to have bike paths from the East Yard of Town into Union Station and walkways from Long Wharf. And they are going to preserve the Vision Trail, just move it over, that little trail that goes under the highway. They're going to put it on streets.
I think they already started that. If you go by Brewery Street,
that's a whole different trail.
That's a different trail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow!
So now they have to figure out a better way to connect the Vision Trail to that trail that goes out to Long Wharf and around Brewery Square. Because I actually took the trail for old time's sake. So I was like, they might close this thing up, so let me take it. When I was going out to the food truck festival, it doesn't actually connect in any way to that other trail. It connects to the street over there, and so you'd have to take the street back to the trail. And then when you try to cross the street, there's no entry point into the trail. You
so
have
you
to go across
there. You went to the food truck festival.
I rode my bike there because I wanted to try out the new
what did
lane,
you end up
which
doing?
Is well, I went to the light. So you go to the light at what is that? Is that
Water Street?
Brewery Street?
Is it Brewery?
Brewery?
I think it's
and
Brewery.
Water.
And so, you know, there's that light right there at the corner where the post office is and the
brewery.
Edge of IKEA's parking
Sergeant
lot.
Drive.
There's no entry point. Like, if you can't just go straight across because the cars have to turn either way.
Right. Okay.
But there's nothing that tells bikes, hey, there's this trail over here.
Right. Right.
And you have to, you're crossing the sidewalk. It's a little, it's awkward. So.
But here's the deal.
I like the trail, though. It's really nice.
Well, do you think people are ever going to be able to walk on that side of town?
This does make it I noticed people actually walking on the bike trail when they were coming back instead of walking on the nice sidewalk that's next to the bike trail.
Walk, they really
and I don't want to run anybody over my bike, which is always a big complaint from pedestrians.
To be walking and biking by the water.
Absolutely.
They have that whole park by the harbor. They
want
it to be
nice.
You went to a food truck festival and dragon races there last Saturday. They really want to make that part of New Haven and vibrant again. So this train station deal is going to help a little bit connect that to the rail station because there are some barriers there with the highway and the train tracks. What are you saying, Joe?
Yeah, the question I have is on the train station. I just saw a report just this morning that Metro North, I hope they're going to have safer parking lots because they have the highest in the nation for auto theft at the train station.
Yeah, they also have the highest ridership, right? Or that's Amtrak, I guess.
Amtrak, it is.
But Metro so people North, go there and steal cars?
Apparently, they're car shopping at the Metro North stops between New Haven to Fairfield.
What the police are saying is that the reason is that people actually leave their cars on and run in. So,
but remember though, in the state's design, they were going to make it easier to do that, right? They were going to make it so you could just drive up to the platform essentially and leave your car and get on without going through the train station. So if you have to have that pause where I need to go buy some coffee, maybe you'll take the time to lock your car and then go to the train.
But you know, with these new cars, you know, it's easy to leave them on. I've done it before with my car. I mean, they run so quiet these days, especially if you get one of the battery
operated. You don't even feel like they're on. But, let me ask you this. I feel bad for him his car stolen. Things in your car stolen. But do you feel a little less sympathy when people have left the engine running with the key in there?
No, absolutely not. It's still their car.
It's not the smartest thing to do. No, you don't want to.
People are distracted, though, right?
Exactly.
They're pretty distracted.
If you get out of these new cars today, I'm telling you, you think you turn it off, but it's still running. It's so quiet. If you did you move around 2 or 3 times in the car before you step out, you forget you didn't turn the thing because they're all push button. It's not like turning a key and taking it out of the ignition. The push button, you walk out thinking you got the keys on you.
And there's no signal or anything.
Exactly.
Your car is still running.
On. Exactly. That's what it's needed in it. You know, so something to say, ding, 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 to let you know it's still running. Nothing.
So, Marquise, what was it like up at the Capitol when I was running in those few hours?
I was pretty frenzied, particularly in the last couple of hours as the session is closing out before midnight. And in the Senate in particular, so at about 10:30 or so, it almost turns into an auction. The clerk is reading the bill, and then all of a sudden he goes blah 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 blah, and then Nancy Wyman is like gaveling before he's finished talking. Like that's how fast they're going, which is actually a little scary.
Yeah, it is.
Because you're
making decisions on what.
And you're like,
and
what?
Wait till next session. So in the special session, they have something called an implementer, a document that's thousands of pages when they pass the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they sneak in all these little bills that have nothing to do with money that didn't make it in the session. And they say that most of the legislators have never read it. So after we've spent months and months having public hearings with thousands of people go up to the Capitol, we're for this, we're not for this, here's the expert text money. After we had this race that Markeisha covered for the Independent this week up until midnight to get certain bills passed, then stuff live or dies based in the back room with the heads of each party and the governor decide, this we'll let you get in this. If you give us, you know, the $10 million for this in our town, we'll let you put in your naming this highway or money for that canal or not. And nobody even knows that they're running. Nobody knows it happens. And it's this. It's this very State Senator Kennedy on the shoreline is trying to change about the implementers and how much time you at least have to read it. Even if the public's got to know, at least maybe the legislature. So I'm wondering about Markeisha. Now you're sitting there. Do you even know what's happening at the end? Because I wouldn't.
It's like, so the conveyance bill, the bill that gave us the parcels of land that we wanted and that Union Station was originally
those
in.
Those are stand-owned lots, 15 lots in town. The state had blighted. And we couldn't control them. Now we're going to get them.
Exactly. And that came up at about 10:34. That bill probably was passed by before 10:40. Wow. That's how fast it went.
Did you hear any bills in regards to incarceration laws? That, you know,
so a lot
because
of the
those are the ones that get snuck in when they're rushing through like that. And then next thing you know, the urban community is whacked.
Mm. So I was bouncing back and forth between there, so I didn't hear anything like that. So I felt like a lot of the, like any kind of reform or incarceration bills, not specifically in like increasing incarceration penalties, but actual reform bills. I think Gary Winfield's solitary confinement bill, I think that actually happened last week. So like some of those, like those
did
got
it pass?
That passed.
Now they have to be careful about how long you put someone in solitary confinement, and if. We have people to monitor it, like the ACLU and criminal justice reform advocates, the people who wanted to pass this. I think, Markeisha, tell me if I'm wrong, the onus is really going to be on them to follow up. So now it's going to be reported. So will there be people spending the time reading the reports to see if people getting locked up too long?
Exactly. And what they really want is you to post that on a website where people can easily access that information. So it'll be important to make sure that that happens.
So if I'm sitting there for 7 months in the hole, I got to be hoping somebody's looking at the web.
Yeah. Or paying attention, like knowing that you're there.
That's true. So much of this about follow-up and paying attention.
Absolutely. It really is.
And, but bond reform was a big victory.
Yes, bond reform
was a big
victory.
This was a big victory for criminal justice in this session. And tell me if I have it right, Markeisha. A judge could no longer, if you don't have the money for a nonviolent offense to post bond, they can't lock you up.
Hmm.
Yes, I think that's correct.
Okay.
Because essentially they don't want you in jail for a crime. Like, you're spending more time in jail because you don't have the cash as opposed to the actual crime that you committed.
Because jail's supposed to be pretrial if you're a threat to, you're either going to flee or you're going to harm somebody.
Right.
But a lot of times poorer people sort of end up in jail more because they can't post the bond.
So we're getting rid of the Ferguson, Missouri rule.
Well, I don't know. Harry, Joseph, are you sympathetic to this?
Of course not.
Harry.
He's like, let me speak for myself.
Harry.
I'm a spokesperson.
Harry.
Yeah, I don't care.
Well, do you care that you're listening to Pundit Friday and WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at 103 at newhavenindependent.org? Is there an AC we can turn on or something? We're sweltering.
Not during the show.
Oh, not during the show. Okay.
Are you guys so hot today? Because I'm like really cool over here.
Well, you're from Trinidad and Tobago.
No.
You're the West sitting a breezier way.
I'm a transplant 40-something years removed. Are you kidding me?
Like, any tolerance I had is gone.
Yeah, I can't even use that anymore.
So, Markeisha Ricks, there's still some unanswered questions. For instance, because the budget's going to come up and deal with matters of how much money we take in and how much we spend, it's still on the table that we might legalize marijuana, though it doesn't look likely, right, for that money. And it's still on the table that we can institute tolls on highways coming in and out of the state, correct?
Yes. All of that's still, like, possible. How likely? Not sure.
Bring back the tolls.
Now, a big question for New Haven. So Markeisha's had another late night where New Haven was passing its own city budget for the year. And like other cities and towns across the state, New Haven had a guess. We don't know how much money they were going to get from the state. We start out the season with the word from the governor and legislative leaders that we'll get a $31 million increase in aid. So the Harp administration put together a budget based on that. Then these deficits happening, aid was getting cut. So then we're told, well, you got to count on less. So they cut $13 million out of it. Then they had to pass it this week. So they passed it with another cut, and they went down in what was originally increased. And they ended up, and there's no tax increase, by the way, but they ended up with a $539 million city budget. But Markeisha, do people believe that the budget they were passing is actually what's going to end up being the budget in reality, given the uncertainty of the state?
I think they're anticipating that there will be more cuts.
or cuts, not a tax increase. Because
no, nobody's going to use the tax increase phrase. At least not until they absolutely have to. If they do, but I've not heard anybody talk about tax increase.
So they're going to cut even more.
I think they try to cut before they try to raise taxes. Wow. Or they'd have like what they're expecting is less money from the state, which means so out of all of that, right? So when they cut the additional from our spending side of the budget, they had to conversely like cut the revenue side. Mm-hmm. So what they cut is the expectation of what they were going to get even further from the state. So they'll just keep cutting that number, but mm-hmm. of course you have to take that spending from somewhere. Right. And they've done a lot. The budget director Joe Clerken has done a lot to find additional monies in vacancies and places that they're not going to fill. Where do you think they should look, Joe Ugly?
Well, you know, they need bike registration fees.
Joe wants the tax bikes. If you're not watching on Facebook Live, Makisha is throwing her handkerchief at Joe Ugly. Here on Pundit Friday.
Flag on the play.
Well, you know, everyone's crying. There's not enough money. Poor mouth these days. There's one.
I got a lockbox.
There's one family mm-hmm. from New Haven that has nothing to complain about on the financial front.
That ain't my family.
We found out such an amazing financial transaction this week in New Haven that makes us think that one of the greediest right-wing families in the history of New Haven, we've learned once again how they made out with a sweeter deal than anyone we've ever heard of.
Whoa.
Ready?
Yeah.
Tell me if you'd like to bid in on this deal. So this week, New Haven Register was bought by a chain called the Hearst family. The Hearst chain.
Oh.
They own the Connecticut Post, all the dailies in Danbury, Bridgeport, Stanford. They now own the New Haven Register, right? As well as their other property. They paid, this hadn't been reported anywhere but the Independent, they paid in the neighborhood of $32 million, okay? $32 million was not just for the Register. It was for the Middletown Press. It was for Torrington Register Citizen, for Connecticut Magazine,
and for
eight weekly newspapers. They're all part of one group. Hearst paid $32 million in the neighborhood, $32 million. That was 3.5 times multiple net earnings for that paper.
Okay? But is it because circulation is down or readership is down?
Mm-hmm. Print papers go for less than they do everywhere else.
Right.
Let me compare that to the first time the New Haven Register was sold.
Okay.
In 1986, the New Haven Register was owned by a family called the Jackson family. Mm-hmm. They had owned it since the time of the Civil War when they were on the side of the South and slavery.
Oh, they were.
And they continued. They switched from Democrat to Republican when racist became Republican. So they became a right-wing paper that, you know, didn't cover the black community. No black weddings were ever in the paper. They didn't print views they didn't agree with in the letters or opinions. They wanted to cover demonstrations by activists. They were a real kind of hardcore right-wing paper. But in 1986, the family decided to sell because daily newspapers were being sold. They sold just the Register. And the Register put out two papers a day. One was called the Journal Courier, and the other was the Register. And I worked in that newsroom briefly in college. It was one newsroom. We shared the desk. They sold just those papers in 1986 for around $200 million in 1986 dollars. Now, Joe, you'd know better than I would, or Babs, or Marquise, or Harry. I would guess that's worth around $400 million today,
correct.
Right?
Right.
So that means that this week, not just the Register, but all these other papers, including the Registers, went for $32 million for what the Register itself
Wants
rent for around what would be now today around $400 million, let's say.
And that's
less than one-tenth. 90% of the value, more than 90% of the value has gone down. Now, at that time in 86, for a few years, daily newspapers were selling for ridiculous amounts of money because they had monopolies in their cities, and you had to go to them to buy ads and read. Mm-hmm. So these big companies came in, bought all these papers, and the Register's one was first fueled by junk bonds. These chains kept cutting all the newsroom. They used to have 140 reporters and editors. It's down to about 40 now. They closed that other daily. They kept cutting, and they kept still having to be worth less and less.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jacksons made out because that was so, they weren't the only ones. The family that owned the Globe sold the New York Times for this huge price that then the Times resold it for much less. There was this moment when people didn't see the internet coming and all this other stuff. And because they were owned by chains, I would argue, who didn't care about their communities, they invested less in the reporting, and the people in those towns had less reason to buy the paper, and they had to find alternatives. Right. But boy, the Jacksons, can you imagine that family got $200 million and walked away with something that eventually was going to be worth 90% of its value?
Well, you know,
that didn't make them happy. They had all these family fights and lawsuits over who had what money, and I'm sure they had high shrink bills, so it's not like I wanted to be in their shoes, but it's amazing to see how that happened.
Well, you know, it's like buying stocks in a company. You know, it's they bought.
Gotta know when to get out.
Exactly. Gotta know when to get out.
When to get off the pot.
Get off the pot. So to them, to the family itself, and you know, there were a lot of turmoil in that family over that money.
Yeah.
So, if not over the money, I knew it was.
Do I get $10 million or $5 million? I'm not going to fight with you. I'll be happy with $5 million. Come on, is it worth it?
I know. They were. But was it because of Grant? Anyway.
They always hated each other anyway, these factions of the family. Not only do they hate people, but they also hate each other.
Right. So there you are. Actually, that is why they hate people. They hate each other. So there you have it.
But now the question going forward. Now, Markeisha, you've been at papers that have been owned by chains and had layoffs. So picture you're at the New Haven Register and you're in the newsroom this week. And the new owners come in. The president of Hearst came in to announce it. He said, we're going to invest more in this paper. We're not going to lay anybody off.
That's what they said?
Yeah, that's what they said. Every time they got bought, the new owners say, we're some big rich company and we're not going to lay anybody off. And then everybody gets laid off. Would you believe them?
Probably not.
Not based on history. No.
Probably not. Because I actually worked in a situation like that. I worked for Gannett for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And the Montgomery Advertiser was owned by Gannett. When I was hired, they were laying people off, which I was like, how does that happen? Yeah. But they wanted to invest in a
smaller.
Well, not that I costed less because they didn't pay very well because that's just what that is.
But because you were costing less.
But because they had gone for several years without covering the state legislature right there in the town where the state legislature meets.
Wow.
So one of my buddies who had worked for another paper in the state was like, they were trying to hire him away. And they're like, he was like, I'm not taking that job unless I have a second person to help me cover the legislature. Cause you can't really do a great job unless you have somebody covering one of each of the houses. And so he was able to get that, but they didn't hire somebody else for something else because they hired me. Mm-hmm. I think they made one of the girls double up who was covering the military cover like education, which she hated.
What?
But what would happen was we would have layoffs and furloughs. So there'd be times where you can't do your job. Literally, your source is calling you. You can't take their phone calls because they're not paying you.
Right.
And they're like, we're not going to pay you. And it breaks all these rules. But like,
that's a news organization.
Yes. And so when I left, Gannett to go to Gannett Government Media, which owned Air Force Times, which doesn't own Air Force Times anymore, but owned Air Force Times, and they had been very protected from all the layoffs that were happening in the general part of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And I kid you not, 3 years later, where they'd gone from, it's like they were a weekly, so we put the papers to bed, all of the Times papers to bed on a Thursday schedule. So it was like election night every night. Like everybody's in the office, everybody. So they would order in food for everybody because you couldn't leave because you had to just work through the night essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Gradually that type of spending stopped and all of the perks and the things of working there stopped. And then here comes, and I saw this one woman who was maybe the CFO at the time, who when she came into the building, I knew what was about to happen, even if nobody else, because she had walked through my building the very same way when I was at the Advertiser. And she was like the Grim Reaper. If you saw her, it was a wrap. Find you a new job. They're coming for you. I was terrible because when they brought her by my desk and they were like, this is something, I was like, yeah, I know who she is. I remember saying that and everything got real cool and she and everybody else walked off. I was like, because she knew I knew who she was.
Right.
She was the Grim Reaper.
Well, you know, with these companies.
And what did they do?
That third year when I was leaving, they laid people off and they got bought and like they sold the government media chain off to somebody else.
So now if I were the Register employees,
I'd be worried.
I totally agree.
I just would.
That you're not going to believe it for the fifth time. Because by my count, it's the third bankruptcy and fifth time. But there is reason to believe that these guys aren't going to cut anymore. And I'll tell you why.
Is it a Trump bump?
Because there's nothing left.
Hearst Media owns all the dailies south of New Haven in the state. They own Bridgeport. They have Stamford. They have Greenwich. They have Danbury. They have Norwalk. They have a kick butt capital team led by Ken Dixon. Great reporting. They want to beat the Hartford Current and the Tribune that owns the Hartford Current, which controls the top of the state where everyone thinks they have to go for state news. Actually, I think Connecticut Mirror and Connecticut News Junkie have the best news coverage, but they're not for-profit print dailies, right? They're news sites. So it's like generals mapping out strategy. If you look at a map, and we printed Matt DiRienzo's map in the Independent story, where you look at there's now territory, all the whole south and west parts of the state was completely controlled monopoly state news coverage and ambitious news coverage by that Hearst chain now. And the Current has the North, and then there's a gray area where they're competing in some areas. So if they completely disinvest, they won't succeed because a hedge fund owned the register until this week. Mm. The strategy of a hedge fund is when you buy a troubled company, you strip it of assets. You pay less and less and lay people off so that you can resell it for more.
More, right.
But whereas Hearst has a different strategy because they are a media company, right? So media companies like Gannett will still always cut. They'll buy stuff saying that, and Hearst will do this in non-editorial parts. Like they already fired the publisher of the Register this week. And they fired the ad people because they say we can do that work with the same type of people or tiny bit bumped out for a broader area. But you can't do the same, and they can cut some like what the Register does that might duplicate in the reporting like the Capitol. But they can't cut coverage of Hamden or Cheshire, and the Register's had to cut so much of that. They claimed to me, I talked to the president, we'll see if it's true, I worked with this guy before, he said that we're going to bump up 10 positions, we're actually going to add editorial positions at a time when half newsroom jobs in America have been cut at legacy publications since 1990. We're going to add 10 jobs because, in fact, people are buying the Register in towns around here, and we don't cover the towns where they only have half a reporter or a reporter. We actually can't succeed with our business model unless we ramp it up. Unless we do better coverage, better. We want to be the place you turn for statewide because they want the ad dollars, big statewide ad dollars from the Current, and they want to get the readers and their reputation for being the big. Now, I don't know if that means it's all going to be true because they're still a publicly held corporation, I believe. So they're still going to have pressure for high returns, fast returns. I believe that doesn't mean they're going to invest tons of money. But I do think that, and if I were at the Register, I wouldn't believe it till I see it.
Yeah.
But I do believe it's a better scenario than having either Gannett or people worried, yeah. Big House Media.
I've actually been worried for them for sure.
I actually think the Connecticut Post is a good newspaper. I don't know what you guys think. I think they have smart reporting, good reporting. They have as many reporters as we wish. They don't go as many town things as you wish. I don't know if they're going to have like full-time people just in Hamden, just in North Haven, just in West Haven. We'll see. But I think we might, I think we'd be cautiously optimistic that they'll step up their game at the Ridge. What do you guys think?
Well, I appreciate your optimism, and you know, but this wouldn't be the first.
Cautious optimism.
Okay.
Because still, this would not be the first. It's still an out-of-town chain. It's not like a locally owned public interest publication.
Right.
I think you need a lot of kinds of media. You need the Inner City News. You need the New Haven Independent. We need to have more reporters, more groups that have different approaches to news coverage. But in the realm of what's now a very whittled down, for-profit, conventional print newspaper legacy, I think it would be good if we had more people on the beat than that.
Well, you know, Hearst is like, if we go back in the history of Hearst, they're the ones who, this might be the first big thing that they went against, i.e. we were trying to legalize weed here in the state of Connecticut. Well, who do you think was the one who helped make weed illegal? The great William Randolph Hearst. Why?
Started a war to increase circulation, according
because of the paper. The hemp was he had bought all of that. He had bought all that hemp farms.
So why
there.
Wouldn't he want legal marijuana then?
No, because he wanted it for his paper.
Oh, he wanted the hemp for his paper.
Yes. That's what
so
that
you
was.
Can roll the Connecticut Post into a joint?
I didn't want to brag about it. You could smoke your news now.
Or you can listen to Punnett Friday on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio at 103.5. Babs, you've been quiet.
I mean, I've been talking for 5 hours, but. I think I don't have any faith in that paper, but I think they're going to have to, even if they raise the quality, they're going to have to raise the quality of the readership. They're going to have to do that.
Because
for so long,
they have to write up to people rather than down.
Yes.
Than encourage people to be Klansmen on the comment section.
Yeah.
And doing like.
They have to do that work. And if they can't do that work, if they can't raise the quality of the readership, then this is just conversation.
Well, but then why would they do that in this climate where Klansmen rhetoric is at an all time high thanks to the current
administration? Because I think for them to be successful, they're going to have to turn the tide. They're going to have to turn the tide.
And I haven't seen any signs in right-wing or that all that.
See, for me, it's not
right
or left-wing. To me, it's like, what do media companies do when they buy a paper? I think there's a limit to how good they can be because they don't live here and they don't care about our community.
Oh, I agree.
But I think within the realm of for-profit companies, the reason I'm cautiously optimistic, and maybe it's because I don't live there and see it as close, when I pick up the Connecticut Post, I say, I think this is a good paper. It doesn't mean there shouldn't be other media. If I lived in Bridgeport, I'd want there to be an independent and an inner city. But I'd want my paper to be a little bit more like that. That's all I'm saying.
That's how I feel, too. But I don't think they've spent so much time trying to make all their papers
look the same based on the other buyer. So
yeah,
if you picked up a New Haven Register, it looks like whatever, whatever, wherever.
And Hearst will be like that. And the truth is, I worked at a paper that got bought by a chain called Tribune. I worked at New Haven Advocate. And the guy who was in charge of what we did was the same guy who's now in charge of Hearst.
Yeah,
that's
so
why we had all that information.
So I don't have any
and
faith or hope
was
in that.
It's so generic, and you went to these like human resources conferences about it, talk like a robot so you don't get sued, and your brain started going dead. That's true. Corporate environment is very limited.
Yeah, so it's because, you know, it's like when you walk into any fast food joint, they're all the same. There's a reason why, you know, there's a look to McDonald's or grocery stores or whatever, so that when you go in one group, you know, if you go in a Stop and Shop anywhere in the world, it's the same Stop and Shop.
So for you, the issue is generic corporate media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's a fair point. What's about your issue in Ward 19?
Well, excuse 19, me, I'm sorry.
Ward 19, where Joe grew up.
Oh yeah.
Joe is Mr. Ward 19. Ward 19 is the most interesting, I think, geographically designed ward in New Haven. We have 30 wards when you vote for people for office for Alder. And you have a hill, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You go down one side of the hill from Prospect Street, you got New Hallville.
And not that's still Prospect Hill.
I'm talking about you go down all the way to Winchester.
When you go to Winchester, it's still Prospect Hill.
Winchester Avenue is Prospect.
All the way to Winchester on the east side is still Prospect.
Okay,
Hill.
Thompson Street.
All right, that's New Hallville.
Okay, you get down at the heart of New Hallville, stretch your Winchester Avenue.
When you cross that yellow line on Winchester, then you're going into
the 20th. So you got some of the poorest parts of New Haven in that ward.
Mm-hmm.
You go up the hill to Prospect Hill, down the other side, you got the richest part of New Haven with million-dollar mansions.
And you know what split it?
St. Ronan Street. Mm-hmm. So that is an interesting ward. Because you're representing very different kinds of people.
Right.
Except for six
but
months.
But I think all wards, I think every ward in this city has that same.
No,
that
not like,
same,
not like
that
Prospect Hill.
Wait, Ward 25?
Not like
Ward 18?
Not like Ward 19. I think they do. I think every ward has its cross
dynamics,
between
but
poverty and wealth.
I think you're right, Babs, that there's diversity. But I think
not
if you go to the
level.
Flats of Westville or Upper Westville or East Rock or Ward 10, you'll see variety for sure, different kinds of people. But the stark.
Right, there is
contrast.
A stop, and it's one street that separates
more
it.
Like that.
Prospect Street changes the whole thing.
But in any
the
case,
whole
there's going to be a competitive race for Alder there.
In the 19th? Oh,
yeah.
That's right, because
there's a story
Alfred
about it
now.
Today in the New Haven Independent.
Okay.
So except for 6 months, that ward has been represented by one woman since 1999. A respected woman who's a community person, not a hot dog, and...
Alfreda. Who is related to who my brother is married to her daughter.
So she's everyone respects her. So she's retiring. She had enough. They pulled her out of retirement once.
For Stratton. So, for the Stratton mess.
Apart, they
right.
So she's now finally retiring. She had enough. So two people on it, two very young to middle aged women who are very impressive are running for her seat. And there's a contrast that's very interesting if you read Christopher Peake's story in The Independent today. One of them is Alfreda's daughter, Kimberly.
I know Kim.
And she grew up very active in the community, really mm-hmm. knows the community. And there's another woman named Sarah Ofosu. I'm sorry if I got that wrong. She's from Ghana. She's also very active, very intelligent woman. Knows a lot about education, for instance, has worked in that. She's running, too, and she just moved there. She's been in New Haven 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So Kimberly's saying, I really know the community, how it works. It's not nasty. It's just different views. She says, I know the community, how it works. I've been here. Sarah says... I'm new to the community. I bring a fresh pair of eyes, and I see them anew. So the question in that ward is sort of, which is going to be more effective for that ward? Someone who's been there forever and kind of knows the players and how it works, or somebody who has talent as well, who sees how things, maybe see things work a little bit differently. Any thoughts on that?
Sure. I think of, you know, we all hear this thing about bringing in someone who's not a politician or someone who's new or such, the person who's coming in to the individual who is new to the area, if they have an understanding of the ward and not just someone new and bringing in fresh eyes, you should have an understanding of the social issues that goes on in the ward. Because
you just know what Sheffield Avenue is.
You should know Sheffield. And you're looking
Street,
at two the different, you know, such stark difference between the residents in that one ward. Understanding that, and I think that's where, I believe Ms. Kimber, you said? Yeah, that's where, she's on Sheffield, correct? Right. Yes.
You know what's interesting, too?
Has,
like, what do you think
she has enough history,
because there's a competitive race in Ward 7, for instance. Like, Alders have two kinds of jobs. One is constituent service, which is very important.
Right.
You know your alder. They're 30 in town. You get to meet him. If you have problems with needing a job or something wrong with an agency or trash that's not getting picked up, police presence, you contact them. The other thing is you're responsible for being the legislative branch that's a check on the executive for crafting citywide policy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So look at Ward 7. You have Abby Roth is trying to win her job back running against Alberta Witherspoon, right? So there you have the contrast in another way. So Abby has lived there on and off. She wasn't older. She cared a lot about constituent service. She would make calls, but she doesn't know the whole ward. But she was great on citywide issues. She really was the first one leading pressing about government reform on policing because she worked Department of Justice. She worked on a citywide smoking ban. Then Alberta Witherspoon is elderly, has lived for a long time in the tower at McQueenie Tower.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the ward lives there, doesn't know Abby Ross. So when a big developer was going to build a project right across the street, she's the one who wanted to get him in to meet the hundreds of people who live on her building who are more working class or on assistance. And she's more at the grassroots. So what do you want more, you know, for when for some
it has to be a balance.
I think communities have to decide what they want. I mean, because I think neighbors want different things and you have to sort of play to whatever they
and
want.
Also,
I mean,
different people are different. Some people might have a capacity both to know people and press the big issue. Other people just have different interests, right?
I mean, that's always the challenge when you, particularly in this city with this.
That's in any office when you think about
with this ward. But New Haven is a little different only because it's got this ward dynamic.
Right.
And there's 30 wards, right?
I know, it's crazy.
I mean, somebody should say ward reform, but whatever.
You just said it now. when the Unite Hearing majority did the change in the charter, a lot of people said, let's have fewer alders because they'll have more power if they have a bigger area and there are few of them that can't be picked off for a sidewalk and a citywide issue. Other people felt we like having smaller wards because that's the ultimate grassroots democracy. We get to know your alder, which brings us back to this question of what makes an alder legitimate. And like when something gets tough, if there's a crisis, you got to turn to a legitimate representation neighbor. People really tapped in. There is no substitute for someone like Alfreda. Alfreda really knows people and has had the conversations with them for 20, 30 years.
And she's played
both sides
of the ward. Not played, but she understands.
If there's
going
to be a problem, she knows whom to call in the city, and she knows who in the ward does what, who might care about it, who's dealt with this before. I don't know if you could ever substitute for that.
Here's the deal.
But a smart
selfish
person
motive.
Sometimes finds the new people moving in who the old people might not know, and they can deal with them.
Selfish motives. You know, I've lived on one side of the ward under New Hallville side of the ward, and I might end up on the other side of the ward.
Now that you're top 2%er.
There we go. Here goes this guy. I just want to know that the person understands my needs as much as my family needs who are still on the other side.
And then the question is, if you understand it, what can you do with it? So some view of a lot of alders is it's a volunteer job. It's hard to get people to run it. I went to city clerk. A lot of wards don't even have people filing yet. And then...
Because they don't want to run?
Yeah, it's a lot of time. You remember.
I know.
You don't really get paid for it. You get it.
Every time I think about that, I'm like,
how should I pay the orders anyway?
So some people feel like.
They get a little money
like
for like.
$3,000
every year.
How much?
Like $3,000 a year.
It's like under 7 cents an hour.
Some ridiculous
thing. But
so like
some people might want to because you get power or you feel like an influence, get people a job. Other people feel like I can make a real difference. This is the ultimate in like citizen government. We believe
in that. I do believe public service is the ultimate in commitment to community.
Right.
But it is grueling. And I think people think, you know, for the amount of power that you get, it is time consuming.
I would never, I'm selfish. I would never spend that many hours a week sitting at long, boring meetings.
But you do it anyway. You're just reporting on it.
But that's fun. I get to run around, smoke.
And you can leave. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Go write what really happened. Yeah.
But when you have to be on the line for the decisions that are made, I mean, I think that's challenging, you know.
It is challenging.
And you
it's
have
like
to.
It's like volunteering to run boards of directors, which I respect
and
so
I've
much.
And I've done that too. And
you've been
it's,
on everything.
I have been on everything. That's why I'm ready to not be on nothing.
That's why I admire you so much. It's also why you get out of the community.
I want to know. What you know, something like the Board of Alders, I would think people would use that as a stepping stone to another career in politics.
Some people do. But the majority
are
like Alfreda, who wasn't looking to game anything, wasn't looking to get ahead. She just knew the community and she was willing to just show up for people.
Yeah. And there's quite a few of them like that I served with who were very much like, I mean, I think the late Voight was late Mr. Voight was.
Oh, Voight. And then there are other people like part that, of the team, and you feel like our team can accomplish something great for the city. So the Unite Here back team, the Union back, they really feel like we have an agenda for the city that's going to help people. They're pro and con, and we had an argument about that this week again at the city plan. But that's another motivation where, like, someone like Aaron Greenberg was running again. He was new to the neighborhood. He beat out people who really knew the neighborhood. He was doing things that was part of that agenda of the union agenda. But from their point of view, that's to make the city better. That if we have a majority, we can actually enact citywide legislation that we think helps the city and acts as a check. And what's kind of interesting, that argument came up this week. So I went to one of those boring meetings where the city plan commission, the reason it was boring, it was supposed to be a 3-hour debate about a plan to overhaul all the zoning in New Haven for the first time in over hundreds of years to change how power works, basically so this group can keep Yale in check. Mm-hmm. And the argument on the one hand was, let's keep Yale, let's hold Yale accountable to people who think it's a good thing, have extra rules every time they want to build something. And other people say that's holding Yale hostage to your agenda as a union to try to advance unrelated issues. And it's a very fair two-sided argument. Other people would say holding them accountable is not hostage because that's for the good of everybody to deal with the biggest employer in town. But in any case, it was a boring meeting because they opened the meeting by saying, never mind, because their proposal was illegal and they got smoked. So they said, we can't go forward with this illegal proposal. But then for the next 2.5 hours, people read long speeches about why they hated it because they had already, Yale had paid its lawyer to give the speech and all these people showed up.
I love New Haven's commitment to being on the record.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't care if this is over. I want you to know that I came here prepared.
Because all Jessica Holmes was the person presenting this whole plan, said, never mind, we're getting rid of it. We're going to keep two parts we all agree on, which is to have some kind of new zoning rule for university development since it's the biggest developer in town, adding million square feet of.
Well, you know, at the end of the day for me, and this was the ruling. This is how I legislated when I was a legislator, and this is how I served. That is always, for me, shared destiny. You could be on one side or the other, but it is a shared destiny, this city. And one can't survive without the other. If New Haven fails, Yale fails. If Yale fails, New Haven fails. And everybody else that's part of this cast of characters, they have their part to play. And everybody, so you either want to see the city thrive and do well, or you don't.
But then we get different what that means. So people who want these zoning changes say, we want, when Yale's building, to have not just Yale thrive, but we want to have jobs that are close to us, be able to walk to our work, be able to have mass transit, to have decent wages. So that's what makes us all thrive together. And then business community and Yale people say, what makes us thrive is that Yale become the best kind of university can be, and that trickles down to jobs for people, and we recognize that's in our interest. You don't have to put all these rules for us. So I think it's a fair, honest argument on both sides.
I think so, too. I think where they should have a great, fair, and honest argument is about public transportation.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a shared destiny on that.
And they have a working group on transportation there.
When Yale decided to invest in housing for home ownership, they made that was a conscious decision. And when they opened it up,
glory day.
Because they opened it up because they realized if they wanted to attract people to this city, or if they wanted the folks that work for them to live in these communities, that they had to do their part to support that. And so what did they do? They opened up this whole home ownership.
Help people buy houses at all different levels. Help people.
My neighborhood benefited the most.
And so did Dixwell. I mean,
you know, so we have seen time and time again examples of shared destiny and what's in everybody's best interest, right?
And I love what Markeisha says about transportation, because the bus system is so weak here. And unlike, let's say, Cornell, that just pays the public bus system to let all their people ride so they can support it and be thorough for the whole city, Yale has a privatized system where they have very good bus service for people connected with Yale, and everybody else gets screwed. Like last night, we had this meeting about Yale. I needed the bus home, and the major bus line, all the other bus lines shut down. The major bus line comes only once an hour at like 9:15 at night, which is ridiculous. But if you're going to some Yale place, you get it in 5 minutes everywhere all night. And they don't extend it to the west side of town where a lot of people would settle for jobs and the city would thrive if you had better
I tell you what would be a bold ass move. If Yale said, you know what? We're going to expand this bus service. We're going to make it do whatever. And that will force the Connecticut Transit people to sort of look at that.
No, they'd say, fine, we don't spend any of my buses. We never cared about it. You people don't vote anyway. Let Yale do it.
How would Connecticut Transit survive?
They would
shut themselves out of. They would shutter themselves if they take that approach.
So, Babs, the question is, Yale could do one of two right things, neither of which they're doing now. Expand their service to the whole West Side so that you have good transportation, or support public transit.
Yeah.
Rather than privatizing it just for their people and do what Cornell does in Ithaca, where you say our people will ride the bus and we'll pay for it so you can afford to have regular service more.
Yeah. And who makes that? Who and what leadership is required to make that happen? Like, where do you take this story? Where do you take this? Whose lap do you put this? Do you put it right in the lap of the president?
Well, that's why some people say that the labor majority on the Board of Alders is misunderstood. They say we're taking that. And they had this fight last year about holding up a biology tower, and there were good criticisms about why they did it and how. But one issue they did press was this issue, transportation. They say you're not getting permission until you have a plan for how you improve transportation and parking for the whole city.
Because, you know, this city is small enough and cosmopolitan enough that if you overlay some serious transportation, that this would not only be the greatest city in America, it would become one of the greatest cities in the world.
And we're not the greatest city in America?
We are.
Especially if
we need
September 16th, we hit for the final time in public. What if New Haven were the place where for the last time in America, in public, on September 16th, people start hearing R-E-S-P-E-C-T from the woman who made those letters famous 50 years ago this month?
And speaking about the president.
Wait, what? How did this about the president?
We had a whole show.
No, that's D-I-S-R-E-P-E-C-T.
Trump isn't under investigation. Comey is the leaker in chief.
Wait, who's Comey? Who's
Hillary.
Trump? Trump, the president,
is guilty.
Lordy,
everything we learned. So everything we learned from Comey's testimony, I just wrapped it up.
So does everyone else agree with me that like we could put that to one side for this hour?
Nobody wants to talk about it because
guys, the cat's out of
they
bed.
Lost.
I would love to see Aretha Franklin come.
So the city got permission from the Board of Alders this week to have a concert again at the Connecticut Tennis Stadium. When the state spent $18 million to build that stadium, they didn't want to be just 1 or 2 weeks a year for a tennis tournament. They wanted to have concerts. So we did in Westville in the 1900s. Then it got shut down.
Yeah.
So now they're going to try one again, but they were secret about who they're trying to get. As the Independent reported yesterday, the people they're negotiating with to come would be the farewell tour concert of Aretha Franklin.
Oh.
When it's at the tennis stadium on September 6th. It hasn't been nailed down. They're negotiating.
That sounds really cool. And then...
Are they going to have other concerts?
And then Comey gave his memos to his friend. And his friend leaked Comey's
memos.
Lordy,
I hope there are tapes.
I hope Aretha Franklin comes.
I do too. I'm ready for Aretha Franklin.
She doesn't hit all the notes anymore, does she?
I don't care.
Really?
All she got to do is what? Oh, she got to do. And I hope she bring a fur.
Yeah.
And a clutch bag.
Let's hope they seal the deal.
Yeah.
Let's hope there's a company from Brantford, the promoters, negotiating with Aretha. Let's hope they seal the deal and Aretha can.
I don't see why they can't. It's not like she's busy.
Well, she has to decide. If you look at her, the tour was ending in August.
Wait a minute. She's not like 70. Trump won the election.
She's in like 77 now.
It's over.
Yeah, she's about 77. Yeah. So it would be nice to have the Queen of Soul in.
This is what happens when you take away their little tension toys from them. The Republicans use it.
And you know, toys.
I can't even entertain these people. They're just so...
How they don't want to talk about Trump anymore.
It messes with my intelligence. I'm too smart to have these conversations.
You see, that's the problem with Democrats. They always think they're too highbrow to handle the conversation.
This is why
the poison sneaks in the well.
No,
I can't. I'm so tired of Trump.
All Joe got to do is show up.
So tired of Comey. Anyone knows that this is the most embarrassing week.
It is. It's just ridiculous.
I don't know why you guys are looking at it as embarrassment opposed to being informed.
I'm very informed now
about Comey and how dirty he was.
This is the nonsense that seeps through into our
reality because it's reality, Joe.
Yeah, right.
See this mess? I don't do this.
What about Aretha Franklin, folks?
I like Aretha Franklin.
I love Aretha.
I like Aretha Franklin as well, as long as Comey make sure that you keep talking about Trump.
Well, thank you for joining us today on Dateline New Haven. Thanks to the best pundits in the universe, Babs Rawls Ivy, Marquisha Ricks, Harry Droz, and Joe Ugly. And Norma Rodriguez Reyes is in Puerto Rico. We love you, Norma, and we can't wait to see you safely return next week and join us again. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience, performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now, we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book it and fly free with us all weekend long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.